Spears will come to her and let the record reflect that it's 8 a.m. committee clock time, February 15th, 2005. Let the record also reflect we have a quorum. Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, co-chair Bill Thomas, myself, Kurt Olson, and Representative Mark Newman are in attendance. Today we'll be taking up HB 27 municipal property tax exemption for police homes and HB 121 service areas in second class boroughs. We'll start with 27.
We've got John here for 2121.
Actually, we'll start with 121. Since we're on a by special request.
So if Casey faints, we can revive her for the rest of the meeting.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Do you want to move CS first?
Well,
there is a CS, I see.
Sure, go for it.
I move CS for House Bill 121, version Y.
Nobody opposed? No.
Go
ahead, Casey.
Okay, for the record, my name is Casey Schroeder, and I'm a legislative aide for Representative Thomas, and I'm also a committee aide for the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I'm before you today to talk a little bit about House Bill 121. And basically, the reasoning behind this bill is that when the state revenue sharing program was in place, residents of subdivisions that lived outside of city limits were allowed to set up local service area road commissions, and they used revenue sharing money to fund these commissions. But now that the revenue sharing program is over, they no longer are being able to count on this source of income, and so they don't have any income to adequately maintain the roads. And as time goes on, these roads are deteriorating and passage on them is becoming difficult at best. But it's also important to keep in mind that these service areas are not separate legal entities from the borough. They're actually part of the borough. So the borough bears the ultimate financial responsibility for these service areas. But on the other hand, the boroughs can't assess a borough-wide tax and apply it to a specific service area. So while they have the ultimate financial responsibility, they don't have any power to dissolve or remedy issues that present themselves when service areas can't adequately maintain themselves. So House Bill 121 allows second-class boroughs to consolidate or dissolve service areas that are non-functional or are functioning at below minimum standards. But at the same time, it protects service areas that are adequately taxing themselves and maintaining their roads. So with that, I can attempt to answer any questions you might have.
I see in the sponsor statement and in your testimony that it says that there are no funds to maintain the roads, therefore the roads receive no service, resulting in safety hazards for all who use them. Would this bill do anything to ameliorate that problem?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I know that the intent is to work with these service areas to get services out there, but if that becomes impossible, the borough wants to be able to alleviate its liability for those roads and abolish them.
Through the chair, follow-up. Is it going to actually alleviate its liability for the safety hazards in the roads, or is the purpose of it so that the service district can't contract for services and then not pay for those services and then leave the borough on the hook for payment of those services? I'm just trying to get a grasp of what this does exactly.
Actually, Renee Breaker is online, and she's she has more legal expertise on that, and she might be able to answer that question a little bit better.
Hi, this is Renee Broca. I'm the borough attorney for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And the intent, we have a number of different sources of liability when a service area is not functioning and doesn't have funds. First, we have a problem when we have service areas that don't even have commissioners, so they can't legally conduct their business. Then we also have safety issues when roads are not properly maintained or not maintained at all. And those are probably the two primary sources of liability that we're hoping to address.
Representative Ledoux.
Could I just, if I could just follow up once again, will you be able, though, if these service areas are abolished, will the borough be able to take over the maintenance of these roads on a, oh, I forget what the term is, an area-wide or a non-area-wide wide basis?
No, the borough currently does not have road powers. We only exercise road powers through our service areas. That's why we're seeking both the right to dissolve the service areas, but also to consolidate them, so that if a service area just simply needs some assistance and could be assisted by combining with another service area, for example, we have some service areas that are only like a quarter mile long. The borough assembly would like to take a look at first whether the residents of that service area could continue to get services through consolidation. And dissolution would be sort of the last resort.
Representative Newman?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess whoever can answer this one best is who ultimately is going to fall back on, if the borough's not taking care of these roads, is this going to be the state that takes care of these roads then, or whose responsibility is it to take care of these roads?
This is Bonnie Williams. I'm a member of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly and the legislative liaison for the assembly. Currently, we have over 300 miles of roads inside this borough that are not in road service areas, are outside the cities, and are not state roads. They are maintained happenstance by people who live along them who choose to do something or choose not to do something. If we were to dissolve a road service area under this bill, or if the residents of a road service area voted to dissolve themselves, whatever length of roadage is in that road service area would be added to that 300-mile pile. They would not be maintained except and unless someone volunteered to do something.
Let the record reflect that Representative Sisna and Representative Cott have joined us. Representative Sisna?
Thank you. And my question of the last speaker is, in the 300 miles of road that you've got in Fairbanks where they're outside of all kinds of legal responsibility to maintain them, what effect does that have on people that live at various ends of it? Has there been a history of having real problems with transportation because of a lack of being able to take care of those roads?
Well, I guess it depends upon your perspective. Let me give my name again. I am Bonnie Williams, member of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. I used to live on a road that was not in a road service area, and the way that it was handled was that a couple of different people living in that neighborhood had a backhoe and a snow plow, and when they felt like it, they went out and plowed things. In the summertime, if I felt like it, I went out and cut brush. We did okay in the beginning, but with time, with usage, these local roads begin to deteriorate. And so eventually, the neighborhood elected to join an existing road service area, to be taxed, to get the money to restore the roads to proper standards. Some people in our borough are extraordinarily independent-minded, and they may have lived on roads like this for 20, 30, 40 years, and they think it's just fine. And so we leave them alone.
Representative Newman?
Yes, through the chair. Say, Bonnie, you said that some people think this is just fine. How many people do you think this is going to affect, and what negative, what have you heard on the negative side of this?
If this bill were to pass, in an unusual circumstance where there are no active commissioners, where there's no tax approved by the voters in the road service area, we will give them one last chance maybe to either join with another road service area or to tax themselves, and failing that, we would dissolve them. We cannot carry that liability forever. And at the moment, our hands are tied by state statute. We cannot dissolve them, so the liability goes on and on and on.
Representative Ledoux.
Under this bill, would you be forcibly able to join one service district that really thinks that they want to go on like things are with another one that wants to tax itself and have improved roads? Would you be able to forcibly join those two service districts or consolidate them?
I think joining would be undertaken very carefully. Let me refer it to Randy Frank, who is the chair of the Road Service Area Committee of the Assembly.
Yes, that possibility exists or would exist if this bill became a law. But a part of another bill that changed the way service areas can tax themselves alleviates that problem. It allows for a differential taxation between one part of a service area and another part. One part of a service area could have 1 mil tax levy, and another part could have 6, 7, 8, 10 mil levy if it needed to raise the amount of money it needed to fix roads or do major improvements. In the past, before this existing law came into being, the whole service area had to pay for a upgrade for a certain part of the service area, whereas now, say, one or two roads within the service area can tax themselves at a higher level to be able to upgrade their roads.
Are you handling this as a LID with the borough participating, or is it 100% from the service area?
I don't understand your question.
Are you handling it as a local improvement district when the people elect to do it, or how are you handling it?
The road commissioners work with their neighbors, and they independently decide through an election what their mill rate is going to be. They prepare the budget. We approve the budget. They work with borough purchasing to select a contractor or multiple contractors, and they oversee whatever is done.
So the borough isn't matching, say, 25-75 or?
No, there's no match, and our involvement is administrative. There's legal assistance, engineering assistance, purchasing assistance. Finance pays the bills, but they make the decisions.
Thank you. We have a couple people signed up to testify in the audience. Reneva Moss.
For the record, my name is Reneva Moss. I'm here today as a Road Commission Chairman. And I just wanted to put on the record my participation in this legislation. As a chairman of a road commission who does function quite well, we tax ourselves, we maintain our roads, we do annual maintenance and improvements to our roads, because those roads service ambulances, fire trucks, school buses, and the safety of those roads is our priority. This bill was introduced because the legislature, through statute, has put a liability on boroughs for road service areas. When a road service area does not function properly, after the revenue sharing ran out, a lot of the road service areas did not tax themselves, did not levy a mill rate. They relied completely on revenue sharing, and when the revenue sharing dried up, they still refused to tax themselves to keep the roads safe. this is what placed the liability on the borough, and this is why 121 was introduced. However, I want to put on the record that the language was written in a way to protect those service areas that are doing their job right. This is only to help, the function of this legislation is to help the borough get rid of a liability that is set on them by statute, but is no fault of their own, that the people in a service area is not maintaining the road. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Any questions for Ms. Moss? Ms. Sussman?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Reneva, I don't know if you're the right person for me to ask this, but in the previous discussion, I guess a question came up in my mind because some of the wording on the, especially that new last paragraph on the CS for this committee, was convoluted enough for me to kind of be concerned about what kind of is being done there. And my question is, it sounds as if it takes a majority of the people who live in both the area that is to take in the service area and the people that live in the service area. So in other words, you can be forced if, in fact, you happen to be in the minority of the service area, but not otherwise. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, I think you're confusing this bill with another bill, and I think it's House Bill 133 that deals with the local boundary commission. This is a separate bill that deals with road service areas that could be dissolved without an election by the borough assembly when the road commission is not functioning properly.
121. I've got, okay.
Any other questions?
It says if voters reside. It's voters.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, what this bill says is everything that is not underlined is the normal way to dissolve a service area. However, the new language says that election does not have to occur if the service area is dysfunctional.
Okay, pardon me. All right.
Any other questions for Ms. Moss? Thank you, Ms. Moss. Kevin Ritchie.
Morning. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League and the Alaska Municipal League's Local Government and Public Services Subcommittee of the Legislative Committee had a long discussion, and actually it was much like Ms. Moss's discussion. I think she summed it up very well. Municipalities' assemblies are required to address in some way the road system as a whole. If there's pieces of the road system that don't work, it may be very possible that the road system as a whole is going to be less safe or less reliable, and that's going to cause problems. This bill essentially brings back the ultimate power if there's a problem within service areas. Only if there's a problem within service areas, I think, that affect the whole, that they can take action to make it all work. The part of the Constitution that the committee looked at was the local government section of the Constitution, and when they set up service areas, the concept was to find a way to make the whole system work, but do it in such a way that people had the ultimate involvement, and you could do differential tax levels and so on. And the Constitution says that service areas may be established, altered, or abolished by the Assembly subject to the provisions of law or charter. So this bill really gets back more to that meaning, allowing the Assembly to make decisions that are for the good of the people or for the good of service of the of some areas that don't receive it right now. It gives them the flexibility to step in when they have to, but only when they have to under these particular conditions where It's necessary to protect the finances of the borough, resolve financial or legal problems of a service area, or ensure that adequate service is provided to the residents. So, thank you very much.
No, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Ritchie?
So does this mean that if you have a dysfunctional service area and you abolish that service area, that the borough uses taxes from throughout the entire borough in order to fix the problem in that service area?
Through the chair, I think probably Renee Broeker would be the best at answering that, because they know more specifically about the situation in Fairbanks and what they might do. I think the answer is they could do that, but if I could defer to...
Are you still online, Renee?
Yes. No, we cannot do that. By state statute, we are prohibited from spending area-wide and non-area-wide tax dollars on service areas. So if it's dissolved, then, as Ms. Williams was talking about, it would join the 300 other miles of area in this borough that are essentially unmaintained or maintained only by private citizens.
Then I guess I don't really understand what this bill does to get anybody off the hook for liability when it comes to inadequately maintained roads.
Because we have the liability because the service area exists. We have undertaken that duty through the service area to maintain and construct the roads in that service area. Once that service area dissolves and no longer exists, that duty also dissolves because we do not have area-wide or non-area-wide road powers.
Thank you. I understand perfectly now.
This is Assemblyman Randy Frank. I also want to add here that another part of the problem is that we have some properties or lots, you could say, within a service area that actually do not use service area roads, but yet they are taxed by the service area because they are part of that service area. And those people would like to get out of those service areas because they actually do not use the roads. They access their property through other roads, usually state-maintained roads. And so to allow that to happen, there would have to be a positive vote by the existing service area and the property owner for that to happen. And, of course, the service area is not going to let those people out, because with the lack of state funding money coming down to help, they need all the money they can get. So those properties are not let loose, I guess you could say. And this has happened more than once in our service or our borough here. We would like the ability to allow those people who own these properties to get out by a action of the assembly.
Any other questions for?
Through the chair, if I may clarify too, one of the discussions that we had, which are other alternatives, which I think are very important to be in the hands of the assembly in cases such as this, is, for example, if you've got a small road service area, you know, and you could be in the middle of obviously a larger highway and that or larger road that serves other areas, and that road service area can't afford to maintain itself. It may be incumbent to find a way to consolidate, and it may be that's the only option. You know, so there's different options when you consider the community as a whole that also have to be taken into account, and in some cases only the assembly acting with these criteria can really do that to serve the good of the whole community, or to serve Assembly Member Frank said, the needs of a particular area that just because humans are the way they are, the people in the service area may not see it that way, but it may be for the good of the community. So that's the concept, I think, that is trying to be put forward here. So thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Ritchie. I'd like the record to reflect that we've received two letters of support from the both the mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the presiding officer of the North Star Borough. They've been entered into the record. Anybody else wish to testify? I don't believe there's anybody online, is there? What are the wishes of the committee?
No discussion?
Any discussion?
Well, I still have questions, Mr. Chair, about exactly the latitude of the service area to exist, if it wishes to exist, and the larger community doesn't want it to exist. What does this bill do relative to that?
Do we still have the attorney online?
Yes, what it does is allow service areas, if a service area is taxing itself and it's functioning as the service area should, providing the service that a service area should, and protecting its roads and doing all those things right, then the Borough Assembly has no ability to affect that service area at all under the language of this bill. The only time the Assembly would have the ability to affect or dissolve a service area under this language would be if that service area is not performing those responsibilities and duties, and by not is essentially passing on the liability for those actions to all borough taxpayers. So it's permitting the Borough Assembly to step in and say, if you're not going to perform your duties as a service area, then we need to step in and protect all borough residents from the consequence, financial consequences of that failure.
Representative Newman?
Can I do a follow-up, please?
Sure.
Thank you very much. The word that really bothers me in that discussion is the word should, because should is who decides the should, and what does should mean?
Are you talking about the language I used or the language of the bill?
The language that you used.
Well, all I'm saying is when you vote to become a service area, you vote to undertake the duty and responsibility of constructing and maintaining roads in your service area. So legally, you have to do that. When you undertake that duty, you then have the obligation to do it in a safe manner that does not present hazard to people traveling on that road.
And can I then ask, so what is that standard? Who decides that standard? Because for some communities, as well we all know, they may interpret that one way, and the larger community may interpret it another way, or vice versa. And is there a standard that's sort of the standard that everybody agrees is the kind of level that is a reasonable standard?
I think the standard is negligence. If you're performing your services in a negligent manner, in a way that one could reasonably conclude that a jury or a judge might find that negligent, that's the standard we're after. Because we're only trying to protect the liability of the borough, not to force service areas to have a Cadillac service area or, you know, to perform to a certain high level, just a minimum level so that you're not in danger of being found negligent.
And so, if I may, because I really, this is a question, I don't really want to be able to, I don't want to have to vote on this unless I feel comfortable about this. If that's the case, then does this bill leave recourse for the service area that is at odds with that interpretation? I mean, can they sue? Is there a way for them to resolve that conflict if they don't want to be a part of this?
Well, remember, this is going to be an action by ordinance by the Borough Assembly. So there would be a public hearing, there would be a work session, there would be a lot of opportunity for those residents to come in and testify and explain to the Assembly that they are, if they believe that they are properly maintaining their roads, there will be a lot of public opportunity for them to make that case.
Representative Newman?
Do you not have any tools in your statutes right now where you can't, you say that these people aren't taking care of their liabilities. Don't you have any tool or taxing mechanisms in place that forces people to take care of this or where you can get the funds from them? My concern is a public safety concern. It seems like trying to get fire trucks and ambulances down some of these roads that won't be maintained could be a problem.
It can be a problem, but the reality under state statutes and voter-approved initiatives, we have a tax cap. If they, in the road service area, choose not to tax themselves, we are prohibited from providing any funds from other sources to do the necessary maintenance. So if they won't put up the money, we need a tool or a means to dissolve the road service area in order to get rid of the liability. The residents have already acted by refusing to tax themselves. They have chosen. They have decided that it's okay. Maybe the fire truck can get up there. Maybe the ambulance can get up there. And I guarantee you the school buses will not be going up there.
Out of the approximately 100 service areas, how many of them are functioning right now? Road service areas.
We have 107, and we have, I believe, two at the moment that do not have road service areas, and commissioners, and we have an election coming up in which there are at least two that currently do not tax themselves. They're going to be voting on taxing themselves. I don't know how many others there were that didn't decide to tax themselves or try.
So at this point in time, it's not a significant number of them, but it could be on a mileage basis or?
Yeah, it's not a significant number, but it's a real problem. And all we need is one accident where we are the deep pocket and we have a liability outstanding here.
Representative Thomas?
Yeah, question. Of the service areas, Why have they become defunct? Is it like people have moved out of the community that supported the service areas and then sold a home to a person that doesn't want them now? And I know typically where I came from, that's probably what would happen. You know.
Well, the road service area commissioners are volunteers. And in practice, it tends to be somebody volunteers for this and they wind up doing it for 10 or 15 or 20 years. I think, Randy, you did it for 19 years or something.
Correct.
And after a while, you know, after 10 or 20 years, they burn out or they move away. Nobody else volunteers.
Also, this is Randy Frank, too. Part of the reason was that most of these service areas were formed in the early 80s when there was lots of state money coming to us. And back then it was $2,500 to $2,600 a mile. Some of these service areas are upwards of 10, 12, 13 miles. That really was their sole source of income. Now that money has disappeared from the state, they are left to their own devices and they just choose not to tax themselves. I don't know if where you people are from, but the history of Fairbanks is sort of anti-tax.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I come from a place where they were afraid to tax themselves for a fire service area until two or three homes burned down in that district, and the borough in the municipality of Haines refused to send the firemen out into a service area that didn't have insurance and protection for the firemen, and it'd be amazing what one fire does. And then we have two, and then they're forming a service area. But I support service areas. At least I was in a third class borough and then a second class borough, and then sometimes that's the only way you get anything done, again, without any money.
Yes, you are correct. I think they are a very good tool to help people who want to help themselves.
Any other questions? Come on, Bill.
What? I have no more questions.
Representative.
I guess this really isn't a question. Are we under discussion now?
Yeah.
I don't have any problem with the abolition of a service area which isn't acting as a service area, because I understand that that leaves the borough, if you continue it as a service area, with a degree of liability. My problem here is it's not just the abolition of a dysfunctional service area, it's the consolidation of two service areas. And I guess I'm thinking that if one area wants to function and another area doesn't want to function, then, you know, I'd leave it up to the area that wants to function to continue functioning, and the area that doesn't want to function, I wouldn't force them together.
Well, this is Randy Frank. I'd like to speak to that a little. In the past, the Assembly did have the ability to consolidate service areas, whether they liked it or not. And this happened around, I guess, a lot of different service areas in the state and here in Fairbanks. And I was a part of a group of people. I was a service area commissioner at that time who championed a House bill, HB 13, which became law a few years ago, that changed the ability of the service areas to be consolidated by assemblies. And this has now created this other problem. But the real crux of the matter was not really the consolidation of the service areas. It was the consolidation of the service areas and the use of monies generated and saved by an existing service area being spent on the new part of the service area that was annexed into it, you could say forcibly. Therefore, it was, you know, a classic case of income redistribution. And this happened quite a lot. And I think that this is what people were afraid of and why they worked hard to get the law changed. Now we have taken care of that income redistribution by another law that allows for differential taxation levels. And so if a service area does become larger because of a consolidation, you could have one part being taxed at, say, 1 mil, another part being taxed at 2 or 3, 4, up to 5 mils or more, depending on the needs of that part of the service area to function adequately.
Thank you, Representative.
Just a follow-up. I guess two kind of follow-up questions. First of all, is that law relating to the differential taxation, is that a bill right now, or is that actually been passed?
It's a law. It was passed 3-4 years ago.
Okay. Then can I follow up again? Wouldn't you still have the problem, though, that if one service district, even if you're going to allow for differential taxation, wouldn't you still have the problem that if one service district had a nice pot of money because they had been taxing themselves and using it prudently and so forth, and another service district didn't have anything in it because they had chosen not to tax themselves, then once you forcibly consolidate those two, wouldn't the money that the prudent service district had saved go for projects in the non-prudent service district, even now?
With the I don't think so. Maybe I could get a better reading of that from the borough attorney here. But just the other night we had a case come before us as an assembly where a service area did not want to, or a few people in the service area did not want to see their taxation level as a whole raised because they had taxed themselves in the one certain part, one street actually, had taxed themselves at a higher level to do a major upgrade. And the other part was still taxed at the lower level. So there was one part being taxed at less than a mill, and another part being taxed at around 6 mills to upgrade this one very bad part of the road. And so, you know, the ability to carry on as a service area with these differential taxation levels is still there.
And I think that I find it very unlikely that the Assembly, if their service area essentially doesn't want to be a service area, doesn't want to tax itself, wants to basically go back to the days of, you know, doing it themselves, that's not the service area that's going to be consolidated. Those are the service areas that are going to be dissolved. The service areas that will probably be consolidated are the ones that still want to be a service area, but they're so small, they really don't have, in the absence of state money, the tax base to essentially tax themselves in a reasonable manner and perform the service. So that's why if they're allowed put in with another service area, they can start to share that overall, you know, the expenses get a little bit more lessened per household. And then if they have issues that they need to have addressed, then they can, that are separate from the other service area, they can use the differential tax zone for that. But remember, these are run by the service area. The commissioners are making the decisions about where to spend the money. They're not forced to spend it in any particular area just because that becomes part of their service area.
Representative
Sisman. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I guess my question would be to you, do we have people online from other communities besides Fairbanks?
Not to the best of my knowledge, no.
I would just love to know how it works in other communities as well, because knowing how it works in Fairbanks is important, but having other communities as well. I continue to, I'll just like to state as part of discussion my own concern and maybe my own bias, and that is that we've got this huge state and we have all these people who love freedom, and some of us find no problem at all with being taxed, and we've chosen places where we wind up being taxed, and we can all sort of find a place. I just wouldn't want to pass a law that affected one community in a way that took away options for other people in other communities. And maybe this doesn't do that, but I'd love to hear from other communities as well.
I can only speak for my community. We consolidated into one borough, wide road service area, and it seems to be working. Mm-hmm. But I think Kevin Ritchie can probably give us a little more
sense. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, thank you. When we had the local government subcommittee of the of our bigger legislative committee, we had a number of communities represented. We had Tom Baedeker from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We had an assembly member from Matsu. We had, I think Renee was online as I recall, and we had others from around the state. And the bottom line is that it doesn't really affect all boroughs the same, and we really, the two that are probably the most dependent on road service areas, which is a pretty significant issue, is Fairbanks and I believe the Matsu borough as well. The question about could this bill be used to really treat people unfairly, I guess, and you know, or inequitably or something like that. And my answer really has to be we have to trust the local government system. And as many of you have been on local government bodies, know that if you make a decision that makes a large number of people very unhappy, then you better not go to the grocery store for a couple months and so on. So, you know, those types of, there are, I mean, it's having that authority. Assemblies have the authority to do a lot of things right now that could possibly be interpreted by some people as good or bad. But they have to have that. I mean, that has to be centralized somewhere. And in this particular case with the road service areas, I trust assemblies to make good decisions because they're so close to the service areas and the people that if they do something bad, they're going to find out about it in a very quick way. And there's a lot, I mean, you know, passing especially measures that cost people money that they think are unfair are very, very difficult to do on the local level and very seldom done. You know, so the local process, I believe, really saves this. Now, The thing that Assemblymember Bonnie Williams said is, at the moment, our hands are tied. And that's truly the way it is. I mean, the way I conceive of this in the discussion at our meeting, if you can imagine, say, like a road this long that people depended on, and maybe the road service area in the middle is having serious problems that they can't take care of by themselves. Well, that affects people upstream and downstream. And this bill only allows the Assembly to step in at certain times when there's no other choice. And most of the community is going to say, thank you. And the liability, which is going to face the entire community, can be resolved that way. Only in those cases, I would see an Assembly stepping in to do something for the good of the community. So that's the, so I guess the answer your first question is, it affects Fairbanks, Mat-Su the most. It affects the Kenai Peninsula Borough, which is a second-class borough, a lot less, because you have a lot less service areas and pretty happy with the way the service areas are. Juneau is a consolidated city and borough, because it's not a second-class borough anyways, but for the most part, I think that it's really directly affecting Mat-Su and the Fairbanks North Star Borough the most. And then the second part of the question is, I think trusting the process is real important, because assemblies will sort out the really bad decisions from the really good decisions and make the right one, I think. So.
Any other questions for Mr. Ritchie? Representative Newman?
Yeah, to the chair. Kevin, it seems to me that the impression that I get from this, and maybe I'm wrong, is if I live on the end of the road and it seems like the borough says, well, it's costing us too much to plow your road out to your place, so we have the right to drop you from that. You've been going along doing your thing, and you've been paying your taxes all along. Am I correct in that assumption, that they have the right to dump areas that they don't feel they're getting enough money on?
Through the chair, I'll let the folks from Fairbanks correct me if I'm wrong. But right now in Fairbanks, the only way road service powers can be executed are through service areas. And so in the case where a service area is like at the end of the road and they can't afford to tax themselves, for example, and some of these small service areas all the road service areas used to get road revenue sharing, which, as you know, right now doesn't exist. And so some of them literally can't afford to tax themselves to provide services. I believe some of the service areas are up in the high 20s right now of tax rates, mills, huge taxes. I mean, it's twice what Anchorage is paying, for example, I think, and which is pretty high, or pretty close to twice. So the ability of these areas to tax themselves is not possible in some cases. So in this service area, which is the only way you can provide road services to yourself, if you can't afford to tax yourself, you're looking maybe for another service area to consolidate with to reduce services to some extent. I mean, reduce costs to the extent that you can afford it. Or in some cases, what really may be better is as Assemblymember Williams said, sometimes people are going to go out and put a plow in their truck and that's going to be their solution, and it allows the service area really to choose. But in not all cases are they able to make, you know, do the kinds of consolidation. And actually, Reneva's probably got a much better explanation.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a yes or a no.
The answer is, I don't think that they would be treated unfairly, and the only way you could actually get to the service issue you're talking about is if the Assembly were to step in some cases.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is about a liability that the state has placed on boroughs involving service areas. And if people in a service area will not tax themselves and will not keep the roads safe, then the borough is held liable for their negligence. This says if they're negligent, the borough can come in and dissolve the service area so that the borough dissolves that liability.
Representative Ledoux.
From your perspective, would this amendment or this bill be just as effective to say that the borough may dissolve the service area but not have the section in it about consolidating the service area?
I think the reason they want consolidation in there through the chair is the fact that we do have so many small service areas that could function properly when they were receiving $2,600 a mile for the roads, but now that they're not receiving that money, they are strapped financially, and consolidation would ease the pain versus dissolving that and eliminating any services. So it's an option.
But I guess it would alleviate the pain because somebody in some other service area that gets consolidated with it would be having to pay it. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think it's more a case of consolidating administration because we do have the differential taxation element. So it's a case of consolidating service areas that you have. Let's say you consolidate three service areas. That reduces your commissioners from 12 to three, or excuse me, three and one alternate, so it'd be four. But the millage rate would still be dependent on the voters.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Any other questions?
Excuse me, this is Assemblyman Frank from Fairbanks. I also would like to add, in that case, we have, you know, like 109, 107 service areas. I'm not exactly sure here. But, yeah, some of them are very small, and if they could consolidate, that would drop their or eliminate half of their need for an administrative fee, which the borough charges to administer all the legality and insurance costs and help that the engineering department gives them. And also it would allow them to go out to bid on a larger area and get a better contract price for the work needed to be done on their roads, whether it be snow plowing, sanding, grading in the summertime, or some of them have, like my service area, you know, we're pretty small. We have 1.35 miles, and our roads are paved. And if we could go together with a larger service area and go out to bid on a patching job or a chip and tar job to resurface the pavement, it would reduce our costs.
Well, thank you very much. I believe we're going to hold this bill for at least a week to allow several of the committee members time to talk with their boroughs and possibly talk with Fairbanks. But I think next we'll be hearing House Bill 27. The next bill we'll be taking up is House Bill 27. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee.
We need to bring it to the table.
I appreciate
you. Yeah, move CS House Bill 27, version F.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate your scheduling this hearing on House Bill 27, which was introduced by Representative Chenault and myself. The bill itself is designed to provide a positive encouragement for law enforcement officers to move into areas that can use the additional police presence. As you probably know, if people live in an area, it's much easier to have good law enforcement. And this is very important for a number of areas in the state, including the area that Representative Chenault represents and the area that I represent in Mountain View, Rush, and Jack. And I'll just use some general anecdotal information for this. Very few people who are law enforcement officials live in the areas that really need the additional police protection. The police tend to live in the areas that have not the federal programs, not the high crime rates. And what this will do is provide a small but significant amount of financial incentive for them to do so. The way it works is this, Mr. Chair, is it allows a municipality to pass an ordinance that will exempt a small amount of assessed valuation from the primary physical residence, place of abode, of the law enforcement officer. And in the city of Anchorage municipality, this will equate, if it's a $10,000 exemption, to about $150 a year, a very modest amount. It will be no cost to the state because of the hold harmless clause in the legislation itself. The genesis of this was legislation that moved through the legislature last year, part of the way, but it didn't pass. And the initial bill was House Bill 241, and we added this provision in the State Affairs Committee, and it was discussed also in Senate Bill 136. But it was towards the end of the session, and we weren't able to get it through. We have a proposed committee substitute, and I appreciated the motion to adopt that committee substitute. Would you like me to speak to the difference between the two versions?
Please.
Okay. There are four differences. The first difference is on page 1, line 8. The original bill and the legislation last year said occupied as a permanent place of abode. And we wanted to be sure that the exemption wasn't sought on a vacation home that would be a place of abode but wouldn't be the primary place of abode, like up at Big Lake or something like that. And by the way, some of the language was taken from a parallel subsection in AS 29.45.050 in subsection R, which deals with volunteer firemen and emergency medical services. And at some point when the legislature examines that, they might like to insert the word primary in there as well, because that could probably use a similar ratcheting down. But that's the first change in the CS. The second change
Mr. Chairman, can we maybe address the questions as he covers the changes so we don't have to backtrack? And it's very simple, Max.
Sure.
Chair, Mr. Chairman, Max, to me, there seems to be some confusion when you use, and I have version F here, where it says, and occupied as the primary permanent place. If it's primary permanent, do you have a non-primary permanent? I mean, to me, a permanent is permanent. You can't have a primary permanent. Well, permanent.
Yes, you certainly could. You could have somebody who owns a house up at Big Lake, and it's a place of abode that you live in there part of the year, and it's permanent, but it's not your primary residence. At least that's the way that was my interpretation.
Can you have, through the chair, can you have two permanent residences, I guess is my question.
Well, the way,
I mean, if you're living in one place, it's your permanent, and if you're not there the majority of the time, that can't be your permanent over here. I mean, I can't live in Juneau and live in Eagle River and have two permanent residences. My permanent residence is in Eagle River, and I'm down here for less than 50% of the time. So I don't, to me, it seems to be somewhat confusing. But I would, you know, a primary place of abode makes sense, but primary permanent place of abode to me is.
It makes no difference if you wish to eliminate the word permanent. My, certainly through the chair, Representative Cott. I would consider that a friendly amendment. I have no problem. The reason it caught my eye is because in the term resident or domicile, that's a legal term. Here somebody might interpret the statute as meaning a residence, not in the legal sense, But in the ordinary, everyday sense, I have a house in Big Lake. I have a house in my district. I have a residence in Big Lake. I have a residence in my district. Not in the technical legal sense. And if you and I were talking as two attorneys or as two legislators, we might use the term a little differently than somebody, a police officer, might use it in reading this. And it makes no difference. My intent here was to only allow the person one physical place that they could claim the exemption on. And then a little later, we in the CS ratcheted it down in another respect, also taken from subsection R, to say that you could get a maximum of two exemptions on the house if there was a peace officer married to another peace officer. They could get two, but if they brought in their Uncle Harry as an owner, who's also a peace officer, they could only get a maximum of two, even though there were three. We tried to ratchet this down.
Representative Newman?
Yes, I have a couple of questions, too, Mr. Chair. Sure. On page 1, line 8, after the word if, it says if two or more individuals are eligible for an exemption under this subsection, not more than two may be granted. So I think first you'd want to strike the word two, so it's just if more individuals are eligible, not more than two. But who decides these exemptions? Is it based on who's there first, or if you have two people that are receiving this exemption and a third police officer moves in and there might be a little favoritism by a municipality or something, say, okay, well, he can have it, or who decides this? Is there any basis on how this is granted?
Through the chair, may I respond?
Certainly.
Okay. That sentence is also taken from subsection R of the thing. What we probably ought to do, Peter, we have here another copy of this statute. Why don't you make a copy of this for everybody, and we'll give it out to everybody so you can follow along. But subsection R, which is the one I'm referring to, Representative Newman, through the chair, is exactly the same language. Quote, if two or more individuals are eligible for an exemption for the same property, not more than two exemptions may be granted. And we took that same sentence and put it in here. From the point to answer your specific question, Representative Newman, if a third person moved in, there would already be two exemptions on it if Uncle Harry moved in with Mr. and Mrs. Jones. So I think that, you know, the issue then would be first in time would get the exemption. If three people moved in, then it would be up to the municipality to determine the mechanism in the ordinance, or the administration would determine which of the three people, the three co-owners of the property, would be entitled to the exemption. We don't get into that detail in the statute. That could be addressed in the ordinance or simply in the administration of the ordinance in the regulations.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Groomberg, Representative Groomberg. Also, on page 2, line 1, you talk about eligibility requirements under a federal program. What are these eligibility? I mean, I don't see anything here that tells me what this is.
These are well-recognized federal programs. They are what are called Renaissance zones, weed and seed programs, they are neighborhood revitalization programs. There are a variety of such programs. A number of areas in Anchorage qualify for them. They deal with lower income, higher crime rates, various things like that. But basically, these are the areas that need police protection. And The reason we used that language through the chair, Representative Newman, is because if we label an area in an ordinance, like let's use Mountain View in my district, as a, quote, high crime area, that will have a terrific effect on property values. It will actually redline the area. And so we used this other language, and we allowed in the bill the local municipality to determine how the ordinance would be crafted. And in Anchorage, what they would do would be say that the eligibility would be determined by those areas that are qualify and are been given grants for weed and seed, Renaissance zone, and stuff like that. In the other areas of the state, in the Nikiski area, they don't have these federal programs. And so Representative Chenault has requested that we use the allow the use of the statistical higher occurrence of crime. And there's nothing to prevent the municipality from saying, if the municipality wished, it could either be a qualifying area or an area with a higher crime rate. They can craft the ordinance whichever way they wish.
Just one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Grunberg, you just stated that an area such as Muldoon, if it gets classified as a high crime area, could possibly have a negative effect on that area with insurance rates with people within that area.
Property
do you
value.
Feel that because two people could get a $10,000 allowance on their taxes, that this would be enough, you know, at a maximum of $150 to just those two people? Do you feel that this is enough to offset everybody else in that community's higher rates and insurance?
No, and that's why we're saying that we don't want the ordinance to have to say a high crime rate. The areas of town that we're interested in, Anchorage, have already publicly been designated as weed and seed areas, this sort of a thing. This would make no change, and that's already publicly disseminated information, and the property values are already set. And I think, I don't know if this is where you were going with that, but if the members would refer to Mayor Bagich's letter, he has said that, and I'm looking in the third paragraph, Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, as currently written, the bill would provide a modest tax incentive of only about $150 to encourage a police officer to live in a neighborhood affected by the bill. It's certainly debatable whether an incentive of that side will have the desired effect, so you may wish to increase that. If anybody on the committee would like to increase the figure from $10,000, I would consider that a friendly amendment. I didn't put that in the bill because I didn't want to do anything that might cause any additional controversy, and that was the figure for the in subsection R for the firefighters. I didn't know if your question was going there, too.
Representative Grunberg, what kind of support have you received from Anchorage Police Department on this?
Anecdotally, they like it a lot. I don't have a resolution or anything yet.
But we don't have any letters or?
We don't have any yet, but I would anticipate we will get some. I mean, I've talked to them.
And what kind of rough number do you have on people probably moving in the first 12 months if this goes into effect?
I don't know. Every little bit helps. I mean, in my district, I'm sure you're familiar with Anchorage, in North Mountain View, north of the Glen, there used to be one police officer. Years ago, she left. It was a woman. Now there's nobody. In South Mountain View, there's one police officer. Over in the east part of my district, which has nice homes, there are half a dozen of them. And anything I can do to get to encourage police to live in my area, I'm going to do. I think maybe it'd be a good idea to raise the limit. But, you know, let's see what we can attract.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Max, I think that I share with you the concern about
small community, or it's small communities, not small communities, but small neighborhoods, actually, as I've got in my district, too. I've got, I think, about four different precincts that are in real trouble and are kind of bordering on being classified. I think two of them actually fit within zones that you're talking about. And really, as I understand it, this bill, and I'd love to get confirmation from you, but as I understand it, what you're doing is essentially allowing municipalities to decide whether or not they want to put in this program that encourages an incentive to get police officers living somewhere where they might not choose to live. They're not choosing to live in many cases. And it's merely a local government incentive, period. It's not any kind of requirement. The state doesn't have to spend any money. It's just the local government makes that decision in their community. Is that right?
Yes.
That's as I understand it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Max, I'm just thinking of Muldoon. And for a police officer to receive a benefit of $150 in tax-exempt status reduction off of property in that area, I know very little properties that would qualify to receive that $150 reduction. So the houses, I mean, at 19 mill rates, the houses in that area are just not valued to the extent where you're going to get $150. Based on a $10,000 reduction. I think at a minimum what we ought to be addressing is, I think, a reevaluation of the amount of what we can get to. Because I personally wouldn't go so far as to say I'd take 100% or the same senior citizen property tax exemption to move into Muldoon, but it'd have to be pretty close for me to move to, you know, those areas. I mean, to attract a police officer to move in there, you're taking a police officer who is probably in the middle class to middle upper class income category, living in a good, nice part of town, and ask them to move into another part of town for $100 a year, or let's say $200 a year. $10 a month, I want you to move over to Muldoon. Ah, they ain't going to get it. I think we're barking up the wrong tree if that's the intent. So I think that needs to be addressed. The other question I got, Max, is to the chair, is, again, getting back to page 1, line 8 and 9, that's at if two or more individuals are eligible for an exemption for the same property, would you consider, in defining that, if, say, two male police officers or two female police officers found a piece of property and happened to be a fourplex, they decide to buy it, and as a consequence of that promulgation of the deal, both were living in one of the plexes, and one of those female officers was married to another male officer, so they are, you know, they're part of the deal. They're going to, I assume they're going to be joint ownership of their 50%. Would they each be allowed the exemption living in one of those plexes and the other officer living in the other half getting an exemption? So you really have three, but would that abode be considered one abode, or where only two of those would qualify, or would all three qualify?
Through the chair. Let me address the second one first, and then the first one the second. With respect to a duplex, that's one parcel, one assessment. It is not a zero lot line. If it were a zero lot line, then each owner would be entitled to an exemption. And in this case, if there was one couple, they would, on unit B, whatever it would be in the zero lot line, they would be able to both get it, and the same with the other couple on the other part. But a duplex is generally one structure with two apartments. It's like an apartment house. And the maximum on the whole thing would be two people. It's like if there were an apartment house and two police couples owned it. The maximum that could be obtained on that parcel, even though it was a fourplex or an eightplex or whatever it was, would be two people. So if it's a separately owned parcel, whether it's a zero lot line or a condominium, or in some cases, like in Juneau, I know my wife has a couple of apartments here, and they've divided a building into apartments. They all own separate apartments. Each one of those would be entitled to a separatist exemption. But in your hypothetical, it's one parcel, so regardless of the number of individuals who owned it, maximum of two. To answer your first question, I think you're probably correct. And if you and the committee in its wisdom would like to increase this to virtually 100% whatever, I'd consider that a friendly amendment. I just didn't want to come to you go beyond this initially. I wanted to be conservative.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With this handout you gave me, it's under Section 2545050. Municipality made by ordinance approved by the voters exempt from taxation up to 150,000 real property owned and occupied as permanent residence by a resident who is. Couldn't you have the municipality add police officers in that section?
Now, which section are you referring to?
Municipal government. It's 45050. It's in the handout that Peter just gave us.
Yeah, well, which subsection?
Page 754.
It's third page in. It's G.
Subsection G.
Yep.
Okay, let me look at
that. No, G-H-I.
I. Oh. Subsection I.
Could the municipality, the way I read that, if they could do by a vote of the people, but I imagine they, people may vote no, but.
You know, that's the senior citizen
right,
disabled.
Or. It just says our 65 disabled veterans, and they, couldn't they add the police officer section if they wanted?
We'd have to amend the that statute to do it.
At the local level, yeah.
If we wanted to put police officers in that, we could do so. We certainly, absolutely, but my recommendation would be to use the format of the bill, because it requires that it be a certain geographic area within, like, Anchorage.
Okay.
So please don't put it in that subsection.
Okay.
And also, the other thing, and I'm going back to Representative Cott, the really substantial subsection here, like the subsection I and subsection A here, they require that there be votes of the people ratified by the voters. And we didn't put that in our bill because it was a relatively smaller amount. So that's a second difference.
Here. Representative Thomas.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Representative Cott about not quite enough. It's a carrot out there for me to move from Eagle River to another area. But I mean, can you put it may up to, and we put the 150,000 limit in there? I mean, you might as well make it where it's going to be worthwhile for somebody to go out there and take a little risk.
I would consider that a friendly amendment, and if you do it.
Representative Newman.
And then possibly add with a vote of the people through the local ordinances, because that's who accepts these other amendments, according on page 3 of this handout, subsection I, on there, where it mentions where the municipality I think what that would do is give the municipalities, or the other people in the municipality, a chance to decide on who's getting what exemptions, instead of the state deciding for them.
Right, I think that would, the community that would be deciding.
Right, the communities would decide, instead of myself sitting here in the state saying, okay, I grant this municipality this opportunity to do this. You know, I don't have a problem with giving the municipality, but I think it should go by a vote of the people in that municipality.
That's a policy call, if you wish to do that. The thing I'd be concerned about is if it's a relatively small amount, it might not attract the police to move into the area. If it's a larger amount, I don't know whether the people, how they would feel about giving an additional break to the police of that amount of money.
But through the chair,
it's your call.
But you've already testified that you would think it would be a friendly amendment to increase that amount.
Yes, already. I do.
So if we were to increase that amount, don't you also feel that we should allow the people in that community a chance to say whether they want to accept that?
I would say that if you increase it a huge quantity, like 150,000 or something like that, definitely then. If you were to increase it to, say, 20,000 or 30,000 or 40 or 50 in that area, that you wouldn't necessarily have to take it to a vote of the people. But if you were to really increase it a lot, I agree with you. And that's why I'm glad we have a committee process, because it's better than just leaving it up to one person. And I think that there should be a balance, and I would welcome your advice, how high you want to do it, and whether you think at whatever level you decide it has to go to a vote of the people.
Representative Newman?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, do you feel that possibly as a sponsor of this bill that would be more of your responsibility to try and bring this information into what you want in your bill, or you want us to add all that into your bill, or how do you feel that should work?
I am willing to go either way. My advice, if you'd like my feeling, is if you were to take it up to, say, $40,000 or $50,000, it wouldn't need a vote of the people. If you want to go higher than that, I think it would. Does that answer your question? Do you wish me to make a recommendation to you?
Through the chair. Yes, I would probably prefer a recommendation, but maybe if you were to take this bill and bring it home and work on it a little bit and bring it back a little bit.
I'm prepared to make that recommendation now. I would say if you were to take it up to $50,000, it wouldn't need a vote of the people. That's my recommendation.
Representative Sisna?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess, Max, the question I'd like to ask is, that was what I had kind of come up with, was $50,000, and I'd sure love to know if Representative Codd agreed with that number, because he's kind of been in this body working on this kind of stuff for a while and might have a feeling, because he had some comments on it, although I don't know. But I'd sure be willing to put in an amendment for us to consider.
Representative Codd?
I don't have any problem with $50,000. I'm just trying to figure out
if that's enough.
What number would entice me to move. And that's another question that I have for Max. But from out of neighborhood A to neighborhood B, leaving my friends, my neighbors, my garage, my dog,
I wouldn't ask you to leave
my
your
safe
dog.
Community over to an area that perhaps is not as safe. And I'm just trying to, in my own mind, envision what would make me want to do that. For $50,000, now you're talking $600 maybe
times two
in Muldoon. I don't think you get there. I personally, if we're going to do it, I would go to the max to the amount that is currently in ordinance $150,000 that we give to the seniors and the disabled veterans. Now, again, it would have to go before the voters, but if the voters already have dealt with seniors and disabled veterans, I can't imagine them not wanting a police officer to live next door to them in a neighborhood of that nature, unless, of course, you're the one there selling weeds and seeds, and maybe not, but so anywhere in between, I think, the, you know, probably the 50 at the very, very minimum. I just, I mean, I'd like to get some police officers here to respond. Would, you know, would you move out of your neighborhood to somewhere else for $600 a year or $700 a year? Maybe the $150,000 exemption is not enough.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Certainly.
If the committee would like, we can certainly do that and get a police, some police here to talk about this. I'm happy to do that. If you'd prefer to do that, that's okay with me. Either way.
Representative Harris.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, I think you know, that might be good to have that testimony on the record, because that might give us some ability to, you know, we're trying to make a determination for what someone else might do from a financial standpoint, and that varies across the board. But I think if we got some kind of idea from a police officer, I think maybe that would help us steer into a direction in which we can make this accommodating and make it a worthwhile piece of legislation. But in addition to that, Mr. Chairman, my next question, as we continue this dialogue, actually indicated, and I think even in some of the written testimony, that what we're trying to do is take police officer A and move them over to, from out of neighborhood A over into neighborhood B. What about the police officers that, for whatever reason, reside in neighborhood B? Would they be the beneficiary of this?
You mean
already? We passed the law, they're already there. So while the intent is to move others into the neighborhood, we're not going to abrogate those who already are in the neighborhood. We want to retain those folks that may be thinking about moving over and joining their friend over here. Because
this house has been broken.
Mr. Chair, of course. You know, I would like, first of all, looking at this realistically, I think it's unlikely that a senior officer is going to move into Mountain View because of this. The people I'd like to really attract are the new police officers who are just getting started. And then I'd like to keep them there, you know, because it seems to me that, like all of us, except legislators who are tied to our areas and love the areas for our own reasons, other people tend to start out in, let's say, Mountain View, and then move out of it. I'd like to give them an incentive to stay there. Mm-hmm. And that's just as important as getting them in initially. But the people I really want to get in are the young people, because they grow with the community.
And Mr. Chairman, it's generally those young people that are first on the force that gets those crappy assignments, too. So maybe working and living in the same place is not a bad idea.
And I certainly wouldn't want them to leave their dogs.
Thank you. I agree with Representative Cotman, and I believe the may up to, even to the $150,000. I definitely think it's worth it if you save one life, one rape, one murder, one child not getting addicted. I mean, you look at our HESS budget, you know, if we can save 10 people over the next couple of years, it'd be worth it. Question is, this is not just an Anchorage bill, it's a municipality. What about VPSOs, fish and game officers, local police, I mean, other, you know, state troopers? If a community wants to attract a VPSO, I got some communities that are high risk and nobody wants to be there, because so, and it's obvious by watching where they place the troopers that they don't want to be in these communities, so they put them in central areas. So just wondering if
absolutely, Representative, Mr. Co-Chair. Whoever you
since
are.
My chairman forgot my
Representative Thomas.
Representative Ledoux.
But you know, it would absolutely qualify. Now, let's look at the language. This is an interesting question that I really hadn't thought enough about, and I'm going
to. Because couple of communities I went to, the young police officers in the rural area are looking at joining federal, going to the federal level because they have a higher retirement and lower retirement rate, 20 years versus 25 in the state. Mm-hmm. And if you allow them to be in a part of the exemption problem, they may just stay at home. I've got guys that are 15 years in the police force and communities are ready to go to the federal government because they can get more, a quick retirement. So,
if I may respond directly, if we may dialogue, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair. In some areas that you represent, in some areas in the bush, they are in an unorganized borough. And I guess they are all in the one, they're all in some form of a municipality, aren't they?
Some of them are, yeah.
Okay. Well, this bill may not be drafted to accommodate that because they're not in an area that would qualify for weed and seed or an urban development program. And you can't say, if you're talking about Angoon or something, some place like that, Tenneke.
They're a municipality.
Pardon me?
They're a municipality.
Yeah, but the place is so small that you can't say it has, one area has a statistically higher crime rate than the guy next door. And if you would like to amend the bill to accommodate small communities to keep them in that location, I'd consider that a friendly amendment too. I never thought about that. Let's work on that. We don't have to, you know, I'd like to get these problems cured.
Yeah.
You bet.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes, through the chair. One other thing that I think we might have to do with respect to the rural areas and the VPSO program, if we want to include those folks in it, this bill says law enforcement officer. VPSOs, I believe, are considered peace officers, and I think that there's a legal distinction made between peace officer and a law enforcement officer, so we'd want to clarify that, I believe, in any future drafts of this.
May I respond to that? Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the ordinance, if you look at lines 12 and 13, the ordinance can define law enforcement officer any way they wish. That's why we didn't do it in here, for exactly that reason. So I do think that's covered. If you don't, I'm happy to work with you, but we wanted to leave it up to the municipality to define law enforcement for just that reason.
Representative Newman.
Through the chair,
sure.
Representative Grunberg. Again, like you said, I don't feel that this is possibly as wrote this amendment or this committee substitute on page 2, you know, where it says meeting eligibility requirements under federal programs are a lot of the VSPO programs or VPSO programs, are they going to meet this, you know, so that maybe we should rewrite that
right
to include under there. Also, we've also talked about raising this amount, you know, considerably. Maybe we should hear from the municipalities now that we have raised this considerably of what they think about this.
Absolutely. Through the chair, it's my intention, if it's agreeable with the chair, that we'll get some of these people here. And I appreciate your working with me on this. Just goes to show that I can't think of everything.
Yeah, it's my intent to hold it for a week and give you adequate time to
rework
it, line up testimony.
Absolutely.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, was there anyone from the municipality of Anchorage that was online to testify in this?
No.
And one other question, just so I have it straight in my mind, Max.
Sure.
You've added the sub-parentheses number 3 on page 2 to the bill. What was the reason for that?
Because, okay, it might be that a municipality would like to say that there are some, and let's just be simple, if there's a weed and seed area, one weed and seed area, but there's another pocket of area that has a high crime rate that doesn't for some reason qualify for weed and seed. For example, Mountain View has Renaissance zones and stuff, but they're just now applying for the weed and seed, but they do have a statistically high crime rate. And if that had been the only criterion, then the municipality could say that for this program, It's the weed and seed area or any high crime area. So they could put both in if they wish. It gives them a little more flexibility.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
We'll hold it over and
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
The meeting's adjourned.